and gentlemen. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski, and we're here this morning with Tom Schivitz. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Tom is Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Associations of Elementary and Secondary School Principals. And Tom is located, your office is in Harrisburg, is that technically true?
Well, just outside of Harrisburg. We were downtown, and we just moved recently to the west shore of Harrisburg into a new facility, but we're still as accessible as ever to the legislature and the Department of Education.
Now, are you a governmental agency, Tom?
No, absolutely not. We're a private association made up of approximately 3,800 members statewide, the majority of whom are either elementary or secondary principals, but certainly we have membership from a variety of people who serve in administrative roles in public education. Among them would be supervisors of special education, curriculum leaders, department chairs, people filling those types of roles.
Now, you recently published a document, your office did, or your organization did, State of the Principalship 2000, which was very intriguing. And I want to talk a little bit about that, because I think our audience doesn't realize, and I do believe that's what I gleaned from the report, that the national media reported that there's a shortage of administrators to serve school districts around the country. Does this situation exist in Pennsylvania today?
Oh, absolutely. The research that you're referring to, and we certainly summarize in our publication, clearly indicates it's a national problem, but Pennsylvania very typically shares in that problem, in that we have found through our own efforts and the national research that we are experiencing as much of a shortage of administrative candidates than our other parts of the country. You know, it obviously begs the question why, and the national research has indicated that several of the issues that crop up typically would be amount of stress now increasing dramatically in those principal positions. The hours have escalated dramatically in the day, in the week, etc. Compensation is not considered equal to the increased stress and hourly situation. And of course, it goes on in a descending list of problems and issues, regulatory agency requirements, etc., etc. So the survey seems to indicate on both national and state levels that clearly there is a shortage, and it has been written about in a number of daily or weekly periodicals throughout the country. We've tried to highlight those periodicals written, those articles written in Pennsylvania. Everywhere from Somerset to Erie to Philadelphia to Pittsburgh. What we're finding is that superintendents are not displeased with the quality and the preparation of the candidates they are getting to apply and eventually hiring. They are just telling us, and really telling the entire nation, that the number of candidates has dropped dramatically. And frequently in Pennsylvania and in other states, superintendents, school districts are finding it necessary to reopen searches to hopefully broaden the number of candidates they'll choose from. This often doesn't provide any greater number of candidates than was previously offered. So although preparation is considered sufficient for the eventual person employed, just the choice and selection is not there. Now, the interesting part of that, at least in Pennsylvania, is that institutions of higher education who run the preparation programs in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania clearly tell us that in the last 5 to 10 years, they are preparing as many candidates, in other words, offering to the Department of Education that these people should be properly credentialed with Administrative 1 certification, as many candidates as they ever did. So there are enough certified candidates available to apply for and fill these roles. Yet when the opportunities exist and the employment opportunity crops up, people are not applying for the job. And of course, we think, and as do others around the country, it says an awful lot about the difficulty of the position now. And when people in those buildings who are serving in teaching roles and have leadership potential and also have proper credentials are not looking to take that leadership role and apply for a principalship, then very clearly they're very, very much aware of the increased responsibility and workload and dynamics that are affecting principals' lives right now. It's a large problem.
Well, it seems that it must be a very difficult problem for school districts. What do they do when they can't find a principal to fill the shoes of someone who's leaving or has already left?
Well, interestingly enough, they are in a dilemma and they get very desperate. We are getting more and more calls, although we never serve in an employment advisory capacity. We nevertheless are getting an increasing number of calls from superintendents asking us, number one, if we could suggest a great candidate for them, and unfortunately we can't often do that. But number two, they're also looking for the names of perhaps retired people who had served as principals in their area who would be willing to serve in this capacity on a short-term basis. Those people are restricted by the number of days they can work in a year in the retirement system, but nevertheless they can fill the void for a short term. So that is becoming a more and more common practice, unfortunately. Not unfortunately because of the ability of those retirees, just unfortunately for the district who cannot settle their employment need and do it immediately and move forward.
Well, it seems to me the problem will most likely... Well, you know, you were talking about the fact that there are just as many people being certified in institutions of higher learning, and yet they're not going into positions. Does that mean they're staying teachers?
Exactly. The majority are staying teachers. Now, you know, some would obviously argue that it may be a compensation issue, too. We've never put that in a preeminent spot, but certainly it's something of consideration. Primary is the decision, we think, on the part of teachers who are certified that they know what their principal is experiencing, they know what the work year and the work day is of the principal, and they know how problems are escalating. And we believe that's the determining factor for them to choose to stay in the classroom. And that, of course, is fine. We obviously need wonderful people remaining in teaching. But we also need those that are willing to accept that leadership challenge to step forward and perhaps help more kids than they can in the classroom.
So then what you're saying is, let's define this for our audience. What you're saying then is that teachers who basically work a 10-month year have the responsibility of their classrooms, but the principal who has 11 or 12-month contract is, in we might say, getting the same pay for more responsibility and more time put in. When you equate it out, they're getting
generally
equal.
Yeah, you're correct there. If you would look at the number of days worked on average, Pennsylvania teachers are working on average now 187 days a year, wherein a principal on average is working anywhere from 225 to 240. So, of course, that immediately strikes a teacher in considering that position. The second part of what you related to, of course, had to do with pure compensation. And unfortunately, principal salaries have not risen to the extent or degree that teacher salaries have appropriately risen over a 20-year period or so. But what's happened is the gap has closed, especially on a per diem basis. And so teachers are asking the very question that you've posed, and that's simply, why should I take on all this additional responsibility, effort, and work, extend my work year by 30 days perhaps, virtually longer than a month, and at the same time really not make too much more, if any more, on a per diem basis, on a daily basis than I did before? And it's a factor. There's no question it's a factor in the situation. So we're looking constantly at anything and everything we might do to continue to encourage candidates into those roles and to challenge them to accept those positions.
Well, what are the responsibilities of a principal? Has it changed in the last 20 years?
Well, there's no question it has. It's what we categorize very readily as what we call a role explosion. The days of a principalship dealing with minor disciplinary problems and so forth, and that's virtually all, and unfortunately still at that, not having enough time to spend on educational issues, they're gone. And the role has exploded to the point where generally people are being forced, our principals are being forced more in a managerial role than they are in an educational leadership role. And you know, the items causing that are societal. There's no one particular villain to blame, but you know, there's no question we have increased civil and criminal litigation that's directed to principals. We have ever-increasing special education requirements, the school violence issues, new leadership models being suggested, the impact of technology, which of course is a good thing, but the impact of it is something that requires time in the workday and in preparation. There's obviously new cognitive learning knowledge affecting the instructional processes that these people have to keep up with. More and more we're finding principals, of course, are solely responsible for developing coalitions with business in their particular school community. They need to become a fundraiser. They've got to support their basic education structure. Some would say probably too much, I think, that state mandates and accountability issues are weighing on them heavily. I don't think most principals fight accountability issues, and I'll be happy to talk about that later, but you know, mandates from the Commonwealth are certainly increasing. We need to validate reform initiatives, the compensation issues I talked about, and really I think the bottom line, if you consider all the things I've just generally touched upon, is that we're finding our people need assistance. You know, now assistance can be in many forms. It can be, quote unquote, an assistant principal, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. It can be increased clerical time provided. Any number of ways that a community, a school district can find to support their staff, their administrative staff, who quite honestly are the administrative team of the board. The superintendent and the building principals and certainly certain central office and curricular people, they form the administrative team of the board, and they are the board's arm in managing the school district. And if the people in that management arm don't feel supported in any and every way that the district can do it, then obviously employees become a little concerned, upset, disgruntled, and others who might want the challenge to face as a principal say, no, I don't think this is the place I should do it. It doesn't appear like principals are supported here as they should be.
I'm a little confused. Can you please define for me everything that you've said about the role of a principal? In my mind, has seemed to have been the role of the superintendent. Why are the principals fundraising? Isn't that the responsibility of the superintendent? Can you define for me what a superintendent's position is in the state of Pennsylvania?
Well, sure.
How are they different?
Yeah, well, I think it's a valid question. I think what's evolved clearly is that a superintendent's role has changed, too, wherein some of the things I've just listed there, you're right to mention, were at one time considered the bailiwick of the superintendent. He or she, however, the superintendent, has been pushed into more of a managerial, public relations, and business role, too. People outside of education, I often contended that if you brought a CEO from any business in and spent, let's say, a week with a superintendent of schools, and just watched and worked through the tasks that superintendent experienced, I think the business CEO would clearly say, that's not much different than my job. And that's what's become the role of the superintendent. And of course, they are so much more embroiled in total community politics, and of course, they must deal directly, first level, with the 9 members of the school board, and hopefully those people are supportive, but realistically, that's not always the case. So I guess the simple answer to your question is that the superintendent is forced more into a managerial role. That managerial role is both political and financial. And on the other end of the spectrum, movements such as school-based management, site-based management, have become popular around the country, simply meaning that the principal is running his or her school as a CEO. And in that role, they're going to have a greater say in, let's say, budget development and handling. They're going to have a greater say in communications, links, ties with the community around them. As I mentioned before, they may even become a sole coalition with businesses to raise money, etc. Things that they never had to do before. And these aren't, by no means am I intimating that these are all bad things. They're just changes.
Right.
And they're changes that have added to the difficulty of the position, perhaps without the support that we hope we could get along the way and need to continue to get now.
You are listening to Children Come First with Dr. Daria Brzezinski. Our guest this morning is Tom Shivitz, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Associations of Elementary and Secondary School Principals in Somerdale, or Harrisburg, if you will, Pennsylvania. Now, I've been a businesswoman for 25 plus years, and just let me be the devil's advocate for a minute, because it seems to me, and I've traveled around the state, across the state of Pennsylvania. As many of our audience knows, I live in Virginia, but do a lot of my work and do a lot of work here in the state of Pennsylvania. It would seem to me that if we are looking at education as a business, which is what you said basically are the responsibilities, it would seem, that have shifted from superintendents and principals with a managerial style, it makes me a little unnerved to think about that. Because I know from my experience from the last 30 years of research that the most successful public schools in the United States are so because of their principals. And their principals take not only a leadership role, but much more importantly, a supportive role. Support to their teachers, to the students, and to the parents, rather than having to deal with the kinds of things you've been talking about, which are business related.
I think you hit the nail on the head in talking about it unnerving you, because it clearly unnerves me, and it clearly unnerves, I think, anybody who thinks about the role of these people in the educational picture. I couldn't agree with you more that, you know, the research is very clear, almost even to a 40-year span. Good schools equal good principals has been validated a number of times in research in a number of different ways. And if the person out there who's not involved in the education community is involved in the business community, I always look at it very simply when I would try to answer that type of question to them. It is that if we want to reform education, and it's not appropriate for us to argue at this point what needs reformed and what really doesn't, but nevertheless, let's take the general public venue, that we have to reform education, quote unquote. Well, that can happen when the leadership of buildings and of districts are involved in managerial roles.
That's right.
That only happens when they're involved in educational leadership
roles.
That's
right.
And clearly, as you stated, and as I absolutely agree, that's where reform will take place, doing all the things that we know principals have to do to be good and to have good schools, because the research indicates clearly that that's the case. It's not a mystery, which is often amazing to me, that people think that there's some mystery as to what principals ought to do to be good and to make schools good. Now, don't misunderstand me, doing the job is tough, but you know, we know a lot of things that first of all, of course, the main mission of the school has to be set by the principal, and that main business is the business of education. And the principal's got to communicate that clearly to the staff and the community and the students. They've got to support standards for teaching and learning that are high, but they're certainly attainable. They've got to provide some really clear goals, and they've got to monitor the educational program so kids meet those goals. They've got to spend time in the classroom.
That's
you mentioned
right.
that earlier. Listening to teachers. They've got to promote an atmosphere of trust and of sharing, and they've got to build a good staff.
And you can't really do that if you're fundraising and doing
exactly. And they've got a
business
good staff, and they've got to make professional
litigation
a top priority. And of course, they've got to not tolerate poor instruction. I mean, these are things that good principals clearly, in 40 years of research, do to make good schools. And you hit the nail on the head. If we push that role more to a managerial one, they don't have the time to do that.
And I have also seen in my experience, having been the owner of a daycare, that I know from a business point of view, being that position of manager, the focus of the educational prospects and the children are definitely secondary to the needs of operational business. And so if we're attempting to make principals as managers, we are taking away from our children every time we do that. We really need to have that as the superintendent administrative roles, and we need to really start clearly defining the superintendent's role as the manager and the quote CEO, and the superintendent as the leader of the support team in the educational role. It seems to me that education has become everything but an educational model. It's a legislative model, it's a medical model, it's litigation, it's everything but an educational model.
And a business model, I might add.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that.
Clearly. There seems to be a public perception relevant to that business model issue. There seems to be a public perception that's an area of quote-unquote reform that education needs fixed. And I would strongly disagree with that,
What do you mean?
Well, budgets are certainly developed. Taxpayers control, in essence, through their elected representative, the budget process. In other words, they're setting the bottom line that can be spent. Now, one can argue forever that this community spends more than it should, or that this one does not, and so forth. Nevertheless, management of monies is not an issue in terms of quality of education in the school. Quality of education in the school is determined by all the things we talked about and keeping that mission in front.
Well, I guess many of the private schools, especially the Catholic ones in the state of Pennsylvania, are exemplary of that. They only spend $2,300 per child, where in the public schools, supposedly, there are $7,300 per child.
Exactly. So some of this site-based management modeling that some people have alluded to, it's very much, in my opinion, it's been driven from the business community, not intentionally, but in a roundabout way, from the business community into education. And that is not a problem. In other words, management of funds and personnel, typical business functions, are not the problem. The problem is reforming or doing better what we do in the classroom with children and their intellectual, their cognitive, their growth.
Well, you and I can get a long-term discussion over this one, because as a businesswoman, I definitely do not agree with you there. But I think that the managerial business end of it needs to be at the level of the superintendent. It should not be at the level of the principal.
Well, and I understand your point, and I think worthy of some consideration.
Well, if you've run a business, you can understand how efficiency works and how operating, checks and balances, and when you've got, so to speak, a never-ending flow of monies coming in from various places, you don't have to worry about those kinds of things. I don't want to get into that kind of issue right now, because I really believe that when we keep the business level end of it at the superintendent's level, and we keep the educational at the principal's level on down, I think we will probably have a much better, much more efficient structure than we have today.
I would agree with you certainly on that.
Now, I have a question to ask of you. How would you see the structure changed to alleviate some of the shortages that we have in the principalship, to alleviate the stress and the hours and the responsibilities? What would that structure look like in your estimation? I mean, how can we do that?
Well, and we like only have 5 minutes. Not an easy answer.
We only have about 5 minutes to go before our break.
Okay. Well, very simply, there are things that school districts, consortia of school districts, etc., can do, not only in Pennsylvania, everywhere around the country. And that is, they've got to make a focused effort to encourage people who they've clearly identified as outstanding leadership candidates. And from their perspective, they've got to increase that recruitment effort and point out the good things about serving in the principalship. We don't want to paint a picture of total negativity here. The job has become increasingly difficult, but it's still extremely rewarding, and it's certainly challenging. So we don't do a good enough job, we in the education profession, we don't do a good enough job of communicating that to future leaders. And I think that's one of the very key elements of the whole process. We've got to accept some responsibility for that recruitment effort ourselves.
Well, I was just thinking, which was my hesitation, I was thinking about comparing the principal of an inner city school in Philadelphia to the principal of, let's say, a rural school in Clarion County. I mean, there's a vast amount of the pressures are vastly different from one place to the next. So, but in any event, I was thinking of the external structure, and you know, we have this upside down pyramid, so to speak, in the state of Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
It's top heavy with Department of Education, administrators, etc., and compared and contrasted to the number of children in this state, there's certainly much more in the administrative levels than there are. And I understand this, and I understand that with the legislation, the handicap legislation, we've now gone from spending $7,000 a child for $100,000 for some of the handicapped children. Then that's including litigation and paying for attorneys and transportation and special people in the classroom, etc. So there are things that are out of our hands that we don't have the ability to control.
Right.
But I still think that there are successful schools who are following the same kinds of laws that there are in the state of Pennsylvania. And on our next half hour, I want to talk to you about how we can look at changing, or what we can change to be able to get into alignment with some of the things that other people are doing around the country. You are listening to Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski, WAAT 750 AM on your radio dial. We are here this morning with Tom Shivitz, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Associations of Elementary and Secondary School Principals, representing principals from around the state of Pennsylvania. And we are talking about the shortage. If you don't already know about it, there is a tremendous shortage of educators, especially administrators, both in the state of Pennsylvania and nationwide, for a variety of reasons. You've heard Tom speak about the fact that institutions of higher learning, colleges and universities, claim that they are still graduating the same number of people from institutions of higher learning, and yet we are increasingly having shortages of our principals, superintendents, and teachers because of stress, hours, compensation, requirements from agencies, the state, and federal governments. So on our next half hour, we'll talk a little bit more about this subject. You are listening again to WAAT 750 AM on your radio dial, and we thank our sponsor, CK Auto. CK Auto is located, has four locations in Moosic, Scranton, Pittston, and Kingston. You'll be with us again in our second half hour, and we look forward to seeing you. Daria Brzezinski, we're back for our second half hour with Tom Shivitz, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Associations of Elementary and Secondary School Principals. Now, Tom, we were talking earlier about the structure of education and how principals, we have a shortage of principals. What do you see as a measure for alleviating that shortage of principals?
Well, I think the greatest thing that we can do, besides the obvious things often center on compensation, etc. But the thing that we have to do is we have to be able to show potential future leaders that there is a support system that will be available to them if they serve in the principalship role, that they'll be assisted in every way financially possible by their school district, given support. And we've got to tie some coalitions together a little bit differently, tie some general efforts together differently that I think, although well-intentioned and certainly part of societal changes, have led to greater difficulty for principals.
What do you mean?
Well, for example, you know, there's no question that principals more and more have to interact with social service agencies. And that's necessary and that's good. And where these coalitions have been put together so that all the appropriate agencies can work together, they sometimes work well, but they don't work well enough, often enough. You know, we would certainly argue that coalitions of the social service agencies working with school have to come under the direction of school officials in order for there to have the greatest impact, so that we can follow Pennsylvania school code regulations, so that we can, of course, offer and make sure that we assure due process, number of protection mandates for students, and so forth. There's no need to mandate additional bureaucratic structure, that clearly. There are some other things that I just mentioned briefly, all of which would be encouragements to people considering the principalship if these conditions were improved. One of them certainly, and one of the most delicate ones, is of course the issue of special education. And it's not the issue of educating the special needs child, it's the issue of dealing with the requirements that demand an inordinate amount of time and paper for either state or federal government regulations. This is both a state and national issue, and really we would argue that this has become such a pervasive issue that it may in many ways and in many districts be distracting educators from the education of all students. And that is really nobody's intention, of course. We've got to find ways where we can alleviate paperwork and bureaucratic demands of special education without denying certainly the due process rights of special needs students and making sure we're certainly doing everything possible to help those children. You know, burdensome bureaucratic paperwork really does not fulfill the intent of providing all students with an appropriate education. Yet we continue to say this. I would have nods of assention from any number of people, but nothing ever gets done about it. The burdens just continue to be layered on. And it is a critical problem.
Well, I don't think our legislators ever considered the ramifications of what they've done with this legislation. I mean, it was originally intended for a small minority of the population, and within a very short period of time, the population has increased dramatically. And I must say, due to much of my own profession, which is psychology and psychiatry, with the children who have now been designated, meaning before it was only physical disorders, and now all of a sudden it's psychological disorders as well, and how can we really, really define a psychological disorder? There's no test, there's no x-ray. And yet we keep burdening the schools with the responsibilities of taking care of children. And frankly speaking, from my perception, do you know anybody who's perfect? Who doesn't have some kind of problem, either physical, mental, or emotional?
Absolutely, I do not.
Well, you know, I know that this is, it would be political suicide and politically incorrect for any legislator on Capitol Hill to talk about somehow reversing handicap legislation. I mean, it would look absurd, but I don't think our audience really understands the impact that this legislation has had on the schools. Now, normally, I've noticed in mandates, and the governor just put out a flyer on per pupil costs, or per pupil expenses, I should say. There's a difference. I know that legislatively you receive about $7,300 per child, but that's an average, and most people don't understand that school districts pay $100,000 per handicapped child. Is that not true?
Well, that wouldn't be an uncommon number. It wouldn't necessarily be an average, but certainly costs for some children can exceed that.
So that means that we are spending for our average and normal child, you know, at the other end of the spectrum. Is that true? Or do we get increased funding for a handicapped child?
Well, we do get some increased funding for handicapped children. The formula for providing that has changed several times. Those changes have never, at least from the perspective of public schools, have never adequately made special ed funding appropriate. That in itself is, of course, is a whole different argument and has a whole different history to it. And really, I think the overriding part of that is what's important, is that, you know, public school educators do not want to not provide help for those children. They do. The argument is not meeting the needs of kids, whether quote-unquote regular education students or special needs students. The argument is the bureaucracy that must go with it.
That's right.
Is that bureaucracy really necessary,
right,
to guarantee that special needs students have due process rights?
Well, that's where I was hoping you would go with it.
Right. We just think not. I mean, absolutely. It's just become such a pervasive paperwork issue. A school principal may clearly be involved in special ed parlance, multidisciplinary team meetings, the development of individual education plans, all things required under by the law. They may literally be involved in those things hours a day, and those meetings deal with one or several students.
And yet they may have 2,000 other children.
Exactly. While any number of other children are not getting some service or some attention to a problem or issue that they would like to deal with. And that's our problem. Our problem is the bureaucracy, not, of course, fulfilling the need.
How do we service the handicapped child through the handicap and the other legislation and still perform our job and functions as principals?
Well, I think one of the problems we have is that advocacy groups, and I certainly understand their issues, I think they would try to cite time and time again situations where when due process could be eliminated for their special needs students, it was, just to serve an expedient resolution for a school problem. I don't think that's true. I think theoretically, if, and it will never happen, of course, but theoretically, if all special education regulation disappeared, good educators would still try to find ways to help special needs students and fill those needs in a very special way. So we've just gone, of course, as we typically do in America,
extreme,
way beyond the spectrum from one pole to another, from fulfilling a need to dramatically overdoing it.
Well, and, in the defining terms, I would have been considered a handicapped child. I'm dyslexic.
Mm-hmm.
And here I have had three businesses.
Sure.
I've raised many children, and I've done quite well and successfully in my career, and I learned to compensate. I learned to compensate when things were backward, and I learned how to read. It took me many years to learn what my problem was, mm-hmm. but I figured it out eventually without anybody's help.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I'm sure there are many, many thousands of people out there who are exactly the same. And the idea that we have to create an environment for one special child in a classroom bothers me, because it doesn't give the opportunity for that child to kind of fend through life for themselves and figure out things for themselves when
right.
we're constantly
spoon-feeding. Well, the different exceptionalities, of course, provide different needs, different interventions that work effectively. And, of course, as you've clearly pointed out, too, the number of potential exceptionalities has grown dramatically.
That's an understatement.
Are there a lot of cultural and societal reasons for that? Yes, which can be related to, you know, advances in medical science and premature births that are continuing to get earlier and earlier with a great survival rate. We walk on a little bit of a cultural or societal double-edged sword there. But nevertheless, as those children enter this public school arena, it's the charge of the public schools to provide a quality education for them and to serve their needs. And I would contend that we can do that in public education, with a much greater, less level of bureaucracy hanging over our heads.
Well, we seem to be able to do it in business, and I think it's
sure.
an opportunity for us to learn how to do it in education.
That's
as well.
Correct.
Let's get back a little bit to a subject you were talking about
uh-huh.
earlier. How do Pennsylvania principals compare with the national averages in terms of compensation?
In terms of compensation, a little less on a per diem rate. I don't find that to be that significant, however. We have printed those national statistics, and it shows that on a per diem level, Pennsylvania principals are generally paid lower than other states, generally speaking. But what we're concerned with, obviously, is the disparity within the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and the disparity perhaps not only between per diem rate for teacher and principal, but certainly disparity between serving principals in one area of the state to another. For example, we often talk about people being place-bound or career-bound. Place-bound administrators or teachers, whomever, or in any walk of life, are people who have found their niche in a community. They've decided that they want to stay there, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, for whatever reason. And therefore, their employment will yield to them what they've made a conscious decision for it to do. They're staying put. Then you have the career-bound individual, and we have a certain percentage of principals, of course, who are willing to move for a better opportunity. And it's in the career-bound world that we're finding that there is probably anywhere from a $30,000 to a $50,000 disparity just in Pennsylvania between similar-level principal positions. For example, and I'm not picking on these places in particular, but let's say a Warren County in western Pennsylvania might be paying an elementary principal $55,000, and let's go to Montgomery County, and in Montgomery County, an elementary principal with virtually the same number of students, the same number of special ed clientele, et cetera, et cetera, that individual might be making $95,000. There might be a $40,000 difference. So the point, obviously, is how can we correct that? Well, maybe we can't, because it has to do with the school tax base and the affluence of the community. But what we have to say then to people is, to employers, school districts, you're probably, if you're one of those low-paying districts, you're not going to be able to stop the career-bound quality principal from leaving you and going to that better opportunity. But what you've got to do is you've got to do the best you can within your own region or your own intermediate unit or county so that you're not losing people to the guys down the road. But more importantly, you're going to send a positive message to the people that you do employ in that their work is appreciated, the district appreciates their work, and the community appreciates their work. So we're just saying to those people, do as well as you can within the boundaries of your personal financial straits in that district, that community, etc., to show these people that they are appreciated. And we kind of look at it in that way, and we find it's helpful in putting the entire employment picture in Pennsylvania, at least for our folks, into perspective.
All right, you are listening to Children Come First with Dr. Daria Brzezinski. We are here today with Tom Shivitz, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Principals Association of Elementary and Secondary School Principals out in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. We are on WAAT 750 AM, and we're here every Tuesday from 10 to 11 AM. We are almost finished with our program today, Tom. We're in our last 15 minutes, and I'd like to kind of do a little bit of summary about some of the things we were talking about. Can you tell me what you think, what kinds of alternative methods can we use to help alleviate this shortage of administrators in the state of Pennsylvania, the principals, and for what I'm told, the superintendents as well?
Certainly. Well, there's clearly some things that have to be done. Among them, we would argue that the Department of Education has to take a role in this. And to their credit, they have initiated some things that I think are important. Among them would be beginning a leadership academy last summer at several locations around the state to encourage people to consider the principalship. I don't think that's enough of an effort, but it's certainly a start, and it's certainly well-intentioned. And really, we have to take some responsibility ourselves. By we, I mean the Pennsylvania Associations of Elementary and Secondary Principals. We have to enhance our professional development offerings so that people will feel better supported around the Commonwealth serving in the position, so they'll know that we have a professional development opportunity available to them for them to learn something that will assist them in their position, that we will be advocates for them and certainly defensive of them. And I mentioned one of the other things we can do before, and that's simply that individual school districts or intermediate units have got to put together an effort on their part. It's frankly recruitment. Interestingly enough, in education, and you can take this business example yourself, there's probably no business in America that at one time or another, especially ones with many employees, where the management or the middle management in those businesses aren't identifying certain people working on their shift, working in their department, wherever, identifying people who they think would be wonderful managers that can move up and accept more responsibility. That's talked about, that's generated, that's a normal course of business in American life. In education, we don't typically do that. Education, we don't typically talk to that individual who
certainly has shown leadership potential and is respected by peers, etc., and encouraged them to move into leadership roles.
That's an interesting point.
Yeah, so, you know, so it's something that we just have to be able to do. And, you know, we're part of the problem, too, and that's a
we meaning
human
who?
Reaction.
We meaning who?
We meaning principals, although I'm not one, but simply speaking, the job has become so overwhelming that we want to be careful how we react and deal with, let's say, our own teaching staff. Our own teaching staff sees what principals go through. And, you know, very typically the comment from a teacher to their principal is simply, I wouldn't want your job, or I don't know how you dealt with so-and-so on that matter. And how we contend how you respond to that's very, very important. If you take the natural empathetic sympathy need and put that forward and simply shake your head and say, yeah, in essence, I've got a horrible job and it's challenging as hell and so forth, you're discouraging people. But if you're saying and your response is very simply, you're right, it is difficult at times, but I wouldn't give it up for anything, and I appreciate the opportunities I have to help kids, then you're sending the positive message. And we've got to do a better job of that with our own staff, our own professional teaching staff in individual buildings across the Commonwealth.
I think that's pretty accurate. Let's do some little bit of statistical information for me. You talked about the career-bound and location-bound principals. What, on average, how many years are they? What is the average years of principals in a position?
Well, people go into, those that do at least, go into a leadership role, a principal's role at varying stages in their career. There's certainly... they certainly now have to have had at least 5 years of public teaching, of teaching experience, and certainly they must have a master's degree, and in virtually many programs, some accreditation beyond a master's degree. That makes them eligible. Now, where do people usually fit in? We find in Pennsylvania now that we have the vast majority of principals and other administrators in the range of employment experience of roughly 25 years. That obviously has a great demographic impact coming very shortly.
Now, how long do they stay in the position?
Well, quite honestly, they might average 15 to 20 years in the position or more, and it may go 15 to 30 years. Interestingly, we're looking at statistics. There is a superintendent in the Commonwealth who has been in public education, not necessarily a superintendent, but in public education, employed for 50 years. We have a principal in the Pittsburgh School District who has been employed in public education for 49 years, and another in the western part of the state who's been a principal and employed in public education for almost all of 47 years. So those people are certainly people who have been administrators for 40-plus years. Now, they're certainly an aberration. They're not the norm. But generally...
And they've stayed in one location all that time?
I think in two out of the three in one location, yes, as I recall.
Wow.
And those are certainly place-bound people.
Now, is that an anomaly? How much?
And that was just a statistic that came up from a database that we were looking at today for another reason.
Well, how long does a principal normally stay at one location?
Well, by one location,
three,
do you
4 years.
One district?
Yeah, one district.
Okay, one district. For the majority, I would say at least 75%. It's for their entire career.
Wow.
Because if you go on a basis of those people that are place-bound and career-bound, although we can't argue a hard statistic there, it might be almost a 3-to-1 differential of 3 place-bound versus 1 career-bound and willing to move out of 4 people.
Well, that's fantastic. Can you tell me statistically how many women, female principals and male principals there are?
I can't tell you that statistically. But I will tell you that underrepresented parties were greatly considered in the national research study done on shortage in general. And so not only did the research indicate that there was a shortage, it certainly looked at female candidates, other minority candidates, and were their numbers dropping as applicants for administrative positions. Positively speaking, female candidate numbers are increasing, and that's not considered a problem. I shouldn't say it's not considered a problem. It depends on the position. Where in other minority candidate numbers are not what they should be. And, of course, those districts, cities, communities, states where that is a major issue, they've got to resolve their own ways of attracting not only quality leadership people, but certainly minority quality leadership people for very difficult urban roles.
You don't have any statistics on the number of female percentage principals and minorities in the state of Pennsylvania?
I don't. The Department of Education would.
Okay.
It's not something that we have retained or really have a need to retain.
Okay. I was just curious because I noticed that there seems to be everywhere I go, there are many, many more white males than there are females and or people of color, especially in areas where, for example, I think it's Reading, 78% of the students there are Hispanic.
Exactly.
And Philadelphia, where they are obviously children of many different colors and varieties.
Well, I don't disagree with them. Let me say this. I don't disagree with that analysis, but it's a demographic cause. We're seeing the end of that picture that you've just portrayed for us, the middle-aged white male. And the reason we're seeing the end of that is because of demographic changes. We talked about the average number of years we have of people in these positions. Many are at the 25-plus year level. If we take 35 years as a number of years prior to retirement, you can see that a large percentage of that portrait you made will be retiring. And there's no question that the number of females and other minorities entering the workplace is increasingly dramatic. You know, the Lancasters, the Reddings, et cetera, in some parts in the western part of the state where cultural influences have changed and so forth, those numbers are increasing dramatically. But I would say that demographically speaking alone, in the next 10 years, there will be a tremendous change in that middle-aged white male picture that I think you accurately portray.
We have only a few more minutes to go here and in our broadcast, and I'd like to thank you for joining us today. We have about 3 minutes to go. This has been such an enlightening conversation with, I don't think our audience really understands the critical need for administrators in the state of Pennsylvania and how much of a shortage there is in finding people who both want to seek those positions as administrators in the state, especially in the principal's position, and want to continue in education as well. Even though they may be receiving education degrees, they are going on to other professions. And I know from my own personal experience with the Small Business Administration in Washington, I was told very recently that among the 80% of females who are funded for Small Business Administration opportunities, such as grants and loans, that at least 70% of them are females and former teachers. So with teaching certification, and some of whom have administrative experience and or administrative degrees. Do you have anything you'd like to say to sum up? We've got about one more minute.
Well, it's a dramatic need that is filling the shortage of administrators. Clearly, there is evidence, and it's irrefutable, that good schools equal good principals. And if we really want to reform what we're doing in public education, or make it better and do it better, we've got to make sure that those leadership roles are supported so that they can remain educational leaders as opposed to building managers.
Well, I concur with you. And again, from our research, we've discovered that the most successful public schools in the United States are such because of the kinds of principals that they have in there and the principal leadership. And we could go on and on forever. I mean,
right.
I have so many things I wanted to talk to you about. I was thinking about the way the structure might look by alleviating it and giving much more responsibility to the students than we are today, perhaps alleviating many of the problems that teachers and administrators face by giving students more responsibilities. But that'll be for another time, Tom. We'll invite you back for that one. How's
Very
that?
Very good. Be happy to do it. Thank you.
You are listening to WAAT 750 AM on your radio dial. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski with Children Come First. We're here every Tuesday from 10 to 11 a.m. We'd like to thank Tom Schivitz, Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Associations of Elementary and Secondary School Principals, for joining us this morning and talking to us about the shortages of principals in the state of Pennsylvania. We'd like to ask you to come back and join us again next week, where we'll be having other people, educators from around the state and around the United States, talking about our schools, families, and other issues regarding our children. Again, thank you for joining us. We hope to hear from you again next week and join in with us for Children Come First. Have a wonderful day and a wonderful evening.